As kids, we asked for all kinds of wacky holiday presents, like glow-in-the-dark silly putty, easy-bake ovens, creepy crawlers that burnt you, and Gobbles, the crazy eating goat. But one 10-year-old girl's Christmas wish list is going viral for its particularly ambitious requests, which include a new phone, designer purses and shoes, pink duct tape, and $4,000 in cold, hard cash.
Who doesn't want these things for Christmas? Get in line, girl. Today, comedian Shannon Knoll joins us to take a look at outrageous Christmas presents we wanted as kids and how much you'd need to spend if your kid asked for all the things on this notorious list.
Plus, Chick-fil-A goes gay, sort of.
How to survive a crocodile attack.
Rue girl Miss Fame calls out Justin Bieber for lowballing her with a $500 offer to be in his next music video.
And Cooking with Drag Queen star Erica Clash gets refused service at Whataburger in Austin, Texas for being in drag.
Whatever burger! I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Ever since I was a baby, I have had one dream in mind, and I hope and pray that maybe it will finally come true. It's a simple wish that everyone has had from time to time, so I know you'll understand me when I share my dream with you.
I wanna be rich, famous, and powerful. Step on all my enemies and never do a thing. I wanna be rich, famous, and powerful. So all I have to do in life is sit around and sing. I don't wanna work, struggle, or compromise. When I set a goal, I wanna reach it right away. Cause paying your dues, that's just for other guys. As for me, I want what I want, and I want it all today! I don't wanna audition. I don't want to take class. I want to be discovered while I'm sitting on my ass. I should not have to suffer. I should not have to sweat. I tried that for 10 minutes and look, what did I get? I'm still not rich, famous, or powerful. Madonna has it all and I can do what she can do. So why is she rich, famous?
That is Alexandra Billings with her song, My Simple Christmas Wish. Get it through our links at feastoffun.com and 5% goes to supporting the podcast.
On the first day of Christmas, my true love gave to me.
I ask this every time, but what is this?
A partridge in a pear tree.
This is?
No, that thing in your hands is a finger exerciser to exercise the back of your hand.
Mm-hmm. What? So you get a strong back of your hand. Ooh. Yes. That is difficult.
So instead of pinching, it's expanding your fingers.
Oh. And so it makes your hand strong. So if you're going to do things with your hands and you need to... Strong hand.
You can have a strong hand.
For people that use their hands a lot, you want to use that. So also, too, what's important to have a strong hand is because if you have a strong hand and a strong grip, it also can help with your tendons and everything that runs up your whole arm.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So it helps fight carpal tunnel. It helps fight, any kind of medical problems you have with your joints and your hands.
And you can buy that through our Amazon links here at feastoffun.com.
Fantastic. I'll get three.
A small portion of the proceeds go to fund this program.
Feast of Fun is made possible because of generous support of fabulous people like you. And if you're thinking of giving a present to a friend this Christmas, we do have fabulous t-shirts. And if you live in Chicago, we are selling Coquito.
Ooh, get that and get this at the same time so you can drunkenly exercise your hands.
Yes. Yes. Well, the bottle cap's tight, so you need a strong hand to take it off.
So you need to exercise your hand before you can open it. Yeah.
Seriously speaking, though, if you give us a Venmo or PayPal, $25, live in Chicago, you can stop by the home studio, pick up the bottle, and we're basically making it almost at cost. So we're using the expensive stuff to make this boozy Puerto Rican eggnog with no eggs, and it's all coconut delicious flavor. But anyways, today, comedian Shannon Knoll is joining us to look at the ridiculous and outrageous things we demanded from our parents when we were kids for the holidays.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
What were you like as a little kid?
I was very quiet and shy, but very bizarre and nerdy and into Jane Goodall was my hero.
Aww. The gorilla lady.
You and she Ellen. Studied chimpanzees. You are like Ellen.
Ah, God, I know. It's a.
Wait a minute, Ellen DeGeneres is into,
she loves Jane Goodall,
she
right?
She loves Jane Goodall, and actually, she's funded her own ape research place in Africa, and she and Portia someday will retire there.
Bless to them both. I will retire with them.
It's called Gorillas in the Mist.
Yeah,
I do feel like there is a strong lesbian connection between great apes and lesbians.
The Arcus Foundation, which is based out of Michigan, funds LGBT rights and great ape research.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That feels offensive.
I heard a rumor that Coco is non-binary.
I would believe that. I think that great apes are a great example of a non-binary. Actually, gorillas are extremely binary.
They are? Yeah. My dog is not very binary.
There has to be some that are not.
Bonobos are very sexual and non-binary, I would say.
Yeah. And, you know, we're humans, we're primates just like they are, and we have a strong bond and a strong connection to them, and we have to care for this planet.
But when we're walking our dog, Jesse, and Jesse is a, notice it's a, you know, male or female name, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And people go, oh, your dog Jesse. And I'm like, yeah. And it's like, how's they all freaked out. And I'm like, it's okay. My dog does not have a gender identity. So
my dog does not conform to humans' idea of gender identity. And when I say that to people, it's like, they get it. You know, they're like, oh, yeah, cool, man.
Well, that's that's because you live in a gay neighborhood.
Yeah,
that's true.
I called my neighbor's dog. I live in on the west side. And I called my neighbor's dog Buddy. And she was like, it's a girl. And I was like, well, I just said Buddy. And she was like, it's a girl. And I was like, okay.
Girls can't be buds.
Don't misgender my dog. Because in some ways, you're misgendering me.
Right, exactly. Like, are you questioning that I'm a girl?
You know, it's so weird how it's like hardwired in some people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And part of it, you know, the dog can't give consent to what gender pronouns you use. And so the dog's not, you know, identifying as something that we constructed in our heads.
But we all know cats are girls and dogs are boys.
So as a kid, you know, especially I think for a lot of LGBTQ people, because of our non-binary nature, parents have had a hard time buying gifts for us on our birthdays and Christmas and Hanukkah or whatever holidays your parents celebrate. And so for me as a kid, you know, I was given at an early age trucks and fire trucks and cars. And I looked at them like, what the hell is this shit?
Oh, I loved that stuff. The trucks were, you could like dig holes and with the steam shovels and all that stuff.
I like the plastic pail and, you know, shoveling sand at the beach. But this was like, this was stuff that was very boy, tough boy kind of stuff. And to me, at an early age of 4 or 5 years old, I was like very turned off by it. But I was very attracted to my sister's beheaded Barbie doll where you could style her hair.
I can't believe you call it a beheaded doll. Like as if they made the whole doll and then specifically chopped its head off.
It's Barbie's head on a pike.
Yeah, it is.
It's a warning to everyone. Behave or this will be you.
Behave or some little girl or Fausto will be doing your hair.
We'll chop your head off, but you'll look fabulous. And so you could style Barbie's hair and put makeup on her. And it was like, it was really, really mesmerizing, you know, and it was like, that's all you needed, right? And so my parents, in their wisdom, turned to giving me creative things like Play-Doh and food-oriented toys as a gift.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not until this one Christmas that I got this Gobbles the Goat.
Gobbles. Okay, can you describe Gobbles?
So Gobbles is a plastic goat that's about a foot and a half tall with a tail that would create this perfect
sound. Crank the tail and
it was
the
a mechanical
and the mouth
goat.
Would open, right?
Yeah, the mouth would open and it came with about 4 pieces of plastic that you could feed it.
Mm-hmm.
But quickly as a kid find out you could shove anything like a handkerchief in there. And later I found out
dead roaches.
Ugh. and live cigarette roaches. Butts. Yeah. And you could stick cigarette butts in its mouth, and the cigarette butts, because they had that soft, sponge, it was really satisfying. And for years, people thought I was making this shit up. And it was only until the internet started developing and YouTube that you can go and Google and see Gobbles the Goat eating shit.
Did you stick your dick in it? You did, didn't you? I'm getting a blowjob from Gobbles.
Gobbles was like, oh.
But I was obsessed with that goat, you know, and I was always like, I thought of it as a pet. And it was what made me want, when people asked me as a kid, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I'm like, I want to be a farmer.
Aww. Wow. Oh, you wanted to have a bunch of gobbles.
I bet there's goats all over Puerto Rico, right?
Yeah, and when I finally saw a goat, I think it was 8 years old, I was like, these are gross. It's
goats
freaky.
Are mean as hell. My best friend growing up had a pet, her brother had a pet goat named Joe, and Joe would constantly get through three levels of electric fence and make her grandmother pass out. Like, he would just chase her grandmother around the driveway.
Yeah, my friend had a goat and a pig, and the goat would attack the pig, and eventually they just had to get rid of the pig was more trouble than it was worth, so they got rid of the pig because they were worried that they were going to get the animal people come and get in trouble for having this pig being attacked by the goat all the time.
Goats are so mean, and they eat everything though. Mm-hmm. That is true. Mm-hmm. They do eat garbage,
and I'm sure some of them can be very sweet. It's probably how they're socialized, right?
I don't know. I think they're instinctively bad animals.
Well, there's a reason why Satanists made goats their, patron saint animal, right?
Have you ever looked into a goat's eyes before? They're devil eyes.
Yeah, they're like a triangular.
I love animals, mm-hmm. but goats, they're demons.
Well, have you seen on the internet, there's this this illustration of a woman's reproductive system, a uterus, and other people who have vaginas.
Yeah, yeah.
People with uteruses and fallopian tubes.
ovaries and the fallopian tubes is the same shape as Lucifer's head,
which is just how Catholicism and Christianity went to create patriarchy and making
it's
it
about
into
scapegoating
it is
the body
scapegoating
a,
right
you,
there
yeah. you go yeah yeah yeah
a
yeah.
uterus
mm-hmm. yeah
it's
yeah.
A, first of all, it's a uter me, not a uter us.
But goats have always, I think in European culture, the goats were associated with fertility, right? Because they're mm-hmm. horny and they'll hump anything.
Yeah.
And in the Old Testament, in the Bible, is the Jewish community, they would take all their sins that they committed that year, and they would place it on the goat, and then they would send the goat off. And so that was the scapegoat. And so all their sins would try to be taken away by the goat. And that's where you have that expression.
And so Christian fundamentals on the internet are going, if you have sex with a woman, you are having sex with the devil. And I'm like, does this mean that it's okay to have sex with a dude then?
Yeah, right? Oh my God. It's all so convoluted. I mean, even alt-right people now are accepting gay men because they like men or something like that. It's insane. They're
But they wouldn't take a gay woman?
Yeah, they hate women so much that they're if you're a dude who sleeps with other dudes, that's kind of cool. I don't know. They're it is so outlandish.
Just
all this,
don't be black, right? Is that what it is?
Yeah, just be a white dude, and no matter what you do, is fine.
Okay.
I think that they're all
way
just
ahead of you.
Yeah. We got it. These guys have got it figured out for years.
So as a kid, though, you wanted to get, you begged your parents for a microscope.
Mm-hmm. I begged my parents for
why did you want a microscope so badly?
My dad is a scientist, and I was like, I want to be like dad, which could have been a sign as well. But he's a microbiologist, and then they got me the microscope 1 year.
That's so sweet. It's like your heart belongs to daddy.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
because my daddy, he treats it so well.
So what did you look at under your microscope?
It came with pre-made slides. It was like a kid's microscope. Okay. So it came with pre-made slides that you could look at. It was from probably that Discovery Channel mm-hmm. magazine or mm-hmm. something like that.
What did you look at and underneath the slides?
It would be I think you could do leaves mm-hmm. and you could see the individual cells of because those are pretty mm-hmm. big.
Yeah.
It wasn't a super strong one. I think that my dad taught me how to swab your cheek and look at cheek cells.
Ooh.
Prepare a slide to look at those.
But the most controversial thing anyone's told kids to look at underneath a microscope is at Mark school.
What did they have you look at?
Well, it wasn't my school, but my sister's boyfriend, this is probably sometime in the 80s. And so he was a little old. So she was probably in her 20s. He was probably in his 30s or 40s at the time. So I'm thinking he was in school, you know, in the early 70s or something like that, or maybe it was the 60s, Boston Catholic school.
For
and
sure.
And they told the guys to go home and bring in a sperm sample so they could look at it underneath the thing. And so all these boys went home, jerked off, and brought in jizz samples like to school. Needless to say, I think that school got into a lot of trouble.
Right. That is also a very Catholic thing to do.
But I know, isn't that nuts?
We need to see your sperm for science.
Yeah. But also, it's against, you're going to grow hair on your hands if you do
it. You know, back in the day, though, is like that people, sex wasn't even discussed. You know what I mean?
Right.
People didn't talk about masturbation. They didn't talk about sex very much, you know. So it was one of those things that, like, because it wasn't talked about, in some ways you can get away with anything.
Yeah, yeah. No, totally. Totally. Yeah. It's like, because then if you talked about it, they'd be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No idea.
We got one toy that we were really excited about was this plastic gel stuff that came in a hot iron mold that you would put in and plug it in, and it would all melt into unedible spiders and scorpions.
Yes, the creepy crawlers.
Yes.
Yeah, those
were
great.
I feel like we had that too.
Yeah, my neighbor had that.
They were super dangerous.
So dangerous.
You can't buy them anymore.
It was like more dangerous than an Easy Bake Oven. Yes. It was like molten plastic.
And that Easy Bake Oven was amazing. That's what got me actually into cooking and baking and food, you know.
Was an Easy Bake?
Yeah.
Did your parents get you one?
They got one for my sister, but I'm the one who used it all. And we figured out, I was like, you could just use any old cake mix.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't have to spend the expensive stuff.
And you could make your own with just some aluminum foil and a light bulb.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
So you were over there like digging holes with your truck and building aluminum foil. You were like a mad scientist when you were a kid.
But that's where we were kind of like disappointed, because we actually got one of our neighbors sold one in the garage sale, and my sister got it. And, you know, she was probably a teenager at the time, and she bought it, I think, for us. And because, you know, the babies, the three youngest kids, and we're just like, this is just a light bulb. You know,
it's a very high wattage light bulb, though. And I think you could get burnt. Yeah,
I think it was just a 65 watt bulb.
Really?
Yeah.
And that would bake it?
I guess because it's well insulated.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so the metal conducts heat, and you could make delicious baked goods. To this day, you can get that stuff and make cookies and stuff. And then I was like, fuck this stupid little oven. I'm just going to use the regular oven. Mm-hmm. And so at the age of 10, I was baking in an oven. And it got so much attention that the local newspaper wrote an article about this 10-year-old boy who was studying confectionery arts classes at the local college.
That's amazing.
Little gay boy.
Yeah, exactly. The one word they left out that was abundantly clear.
And for me, it's like, you know, then as a kid, I would ask for, you know, cake decorating supplies and things like that for Christmas. And people were like, man, you are one weird kid.
Aww. Yeah. Oh, but aww. You got to express some creativity.
Well, you know, and it's really, you never know what will inspire a person. And you know, and I always tell people who are parents, it's like spending time with your kids and really cultivating their passions and their curiosities is what enriches a person's life. And, you know, so much of what we do here on Feast of Fun and Cooking with Drag Queens is a result of the amazing childhood and love that I got from my parents and my community.
We used to open our gifts on Christmas Eve, and my brother, you know, and we knew there was no Santa because, like, he delivered, like, Santa came on Christmas night, and like we already had presents, and you'd see presents around the house. And so my brother and I, when like nobody was home, we would sometimes go get the presents, open them up, play with them, and then put them back.
Really?
Like, we totally put together a complete train set and played with that and put it away. And then one year my sister got us sea monkeys, but we had opened the package and it said, like, in order for them to live, you had to have like fresh water, but like it had to be like 24, you had to put it out for 24 hours.
Uh-huh.
So as soon as we opened it, we had the water ready and waiting to put it there.
You knew what it was. You were ready to go.
What, were you inspired by the sea monkeys? Were you disappointed?
Well, you know, they show you this picture and it's like this king and queen in a castle with their little kids. Right. And you think it's going to be something like that, but it's just like these little tiny, you know, they're freshwater shrimp. They're practically invisible, mm-hmm. you know, and they're going to last. They live in that water for like a week and then they're all going to die.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't have a chance.
And I remember one Christmas, my father complaining that all the things that he got us was like $200.
He like told you how much everything was.
Like, this Christmas costs a hell of a Santa brought it.
Yeah. He couldn't keep it in. He's like,
he couldn't keep it in.
That's,
you know,
the funniest, because yeah, parents are like, I need you to know that I got this for you. You can't.
So one trick my sister, when she had her daughter, she said, yes, most of these presents are from your grandparents or your aunts and uncles or from me. But there's one present here. We don't know where it came from. And that present came from Santa.
That's a great way to do it. Yeah.
Santa. To get mystery.
Mm-hmm. Right. Just to, you get to keep the mystery, but you also get to keep the credit.
But what's the matter with kids today? So there's this Twitter account, and this is the highlight of our top story for today, is a young girl who's 10 years old. She doesn't have a name, so let's call her Virginia. A_Johnson412 on Twitter posted his daughter's Christmas list. And let me read this to you guys. She asked for an iPhone 11, AirPods, a new MacBook Air, a real bunny, a hydro flask, clothes, makeup, pink pajamas, a Gucci slides, which are loafers mm-hmm. by Gucci, Chanel purse, perfume, artisanal oils, essential oils, American Girl doll car, new shoes, earrings, jewelry, checkered Vans, a GoPro, pink duct tape, glue, food, glue coloring, and laundry detergent, clothes for the bunny, a doll camper, a LOL doll's big sister, LOL doll's chalet, new sheets and cover, an alarm clock, and $4,000.
Cold, hard cash. Girl, get it.
Get it, honey. And so everyone's just like howling at this outrageous girl's list. So I added it all together and... So without the cold hard cash, it comes to about $5,000, and then plus $4,000, you're looking at it about almost $10,000 and $9,000. But to round it out, about $10,000, $10,000 in Christmas presents for your daughter.
You know, we're all acting like that's like a lot of money to spend on Christmas and stuff like that. But that's just because we're poor. Like, you know, there's people out there that probably spend tens of thousands on their family members at Christmas. They're like, here's a bracelet. It's $60,000. Here's a new car. It's $150,000.
Oh,
know?
My God.
Well, and I see parents mm-hmm. like who buy, you know, expensive phones for their kids, and especially new phones like that start at $1,000, and they give them to these kids and these kids don't even know how to use them and stuff, and they're breaking them because their brains don't crack. You know, a 10-year-old doesn't grasp what $1,000 is.
Yeah, whatever happened to giving kids phones that have bubble gum in them? Like, that's the appropriate phone. Do you remember that? Like, when cell phones were first coming out, yeah. They would, like, they had, like, candy cell phones that would just be clear plastic filled with bubble gum.
And they were banned in schools because too many schools said that it encouraged prostitution.
For real?
Oh, really?
Because only pimps have cell phones and pagers.
I heard that about beepers, yeah, like that. My mom would always be like, she'd see someone with a beeper and be like, they're a drug dealer. And I'd be like, or a doctor.
Yeah. Or maybe their kid's on dialysis. You don't know.
Yeah.
You don't know what's going on.
No, they're a drug dealer.
Yeah, I remember one Christmas, you know, it was just a really special time. Was my mother turned to me and said, why don't we go shopping together and get presents for your brothers and sisters?
Aww.
And to me, like, that made me feel so loved and special that I was in on the Christmas miracle.
Yeah. Where were you in that order?
I'm the
obviously
next to the
middle child.
Middle child.
You know, and I think, wouldn't dare guess that.
Not well, at all.
And you know, I think as LGBTQ people, we're the middle children of society.
Right.
And
right.
So for us, being validated and being heard and understood is really important. Mm. And sometimes when we're not accepted or appreciated by somebody, we go irrationally out of our way to be won over. Mm-hmm. You know, like recently you did a stand-up comedy showcase at Zany's, was it?
Yeah, at Zany's.
And it was mostly like a mobster Italian
wannabe. It was like suburban dad who thinks he's a mobster. Yeah, and tells Italian jokes.
What are the, you know, what the Real Housewives of New Jersey, you know.
It was like, you send me an email with, no, I'm not going to do the joke.
I want to hear what the bad joke was.
Yeah, whatever. He's not going to listen to this. None of his fans will either. But he's
I hear it though. What was the bad joke?
I honestly will not remember the wording of it, but the essence of it was that he kept getting these like spam emails that are like, I'm gonna add you to a list, and he's like, I'm Italian. When I hear a list, the only thing I think is who's gonna get whacked.
Oh boy.
Yeah. This was the tone of the audience. This
It was a bunch of Goombas, huh?
Yeah. A bunch of wannabe Goombas.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, please give it up for the person who's neither ladies nor gentlemen, Shannon Knoll.
And then I come up to this audience. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They were not having me.
What is this?
What? You what? You what? You, oh, you're the ones that I yell at in the bathroom.
Oh, shit. What did you, and was it a, did they, of course you won them over, right? And they were like,
oh, lovely. Yeah, I had 5 minutes in a running order of 17 people.
17 people?
Yeah.
Did people sit there for the whole show?
Yeah. I don't know,
that's
man.
That's a lot of comedians.
Yeah, it was brutal. I mean, it was like a fundraiser, and I think it was for a good cause, but like
4-H Club.
4-H Club of America. 4-H Clubbers of America. It was like, I go back and forth with like club stuff, whether or not I want to work to get in on it. But like, I don't know, that audience was all suburban. Like,
if you can do it, do it.
Yeah.
It's just for me, I'm like, I don't have an evening of free time to go do something like that. But if I could hang out in a nightclub and develop 15 minutes of stand up, I would totally go out and do it. It's just, to me, I'm like, it just seems like there's just no free time in this day and age, you know?
Totally.
If somebody asked me what I want for Christmas, I'd be like, a day off.
Yeah, right? Like a second.
Just a time to breathe, people.
Just a minute, yeah.
You know? I want to be rich, famous, and powerful. Step on one of my enemies and never do a thing. I want to be rich, famous, and powerful. So all I do is sit around and sing.
Lovely.
That's Alexandra Billings, My Simple Christmas Wish.
Do you have her album?
Yeah, actually, you can buy it on iTunes.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, you know who Alexandra Billings is from Transparent.
Yeah, she just followed me on Instagram.
She did?
Yeah, I'm stoked.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Alex is one of the best people I know, honestly. Yeah. It's like, mm-hmm. she here in Chicago was a comedy legend and a theater and cabaret legend, and she then became a star, moved to Los Angeles.
And now she's
starring
on Broadway.
Wicked. She's Madame Morrible in Wicked.
Mm-hmm.
Get out of
Broadway.
Here.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my amazing? God.
It's amazing.
I wanted her to be, popular. That's Kristen
Chenoweth.
Oh,
my God.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
That would
Galinda,
be really funny.
That'd be amazing. She'd be great at it. She could. I think that she could do any of them.
Well, she's good for roles. Like, she likes to think of herself as a seasoned woman, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I always feel like whenever they cast for that role, they always trying to cast the, you know, Legally Blonde kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
That's Reese. What people expect, right? Kristen,
yeah,
I want to play that role. If I could sing, I would play that role.
Popular.
Did anybody watch the final of Transparent, which Alexander Billings was in?
I haven't.
And it was a musical.
No.
It was a musical version, I guess.
Yeah.
Morris.
I love
dead.
Alexandra Billings. I love that show. I'm not watching that finale.
I watch. The thing is, I follow a bunch of those people on Instagram, so yeah. I saw all of the filming and all of that of it.
So you felt like you watched
it. I was like, I got it.
The creepy guy's
dead. What a train wreck.
Yeah.
He's gone.
I know. It opened so many doors and then crashed.
Moral of the story, don't cast cisgendered people in transgender roles, especially if it's a main role.
Yes, they will always fuck it up and bring shame upon your production.
It's a pox upon your house.
It is the worst luck.
It's bad and it's not good luck.
It's bad luck.
But, you know, in some ways it made Alexandra Billings a household name and lifted her to the level of fame that, you know, someone like Laverne Cox has. And
totally. And I think it also made Hollywood take a look and be like, oh, trans stories can get viewers. So, I mean, it definitely did that, you know.
And someone like Angelica Ross now is, you know, for the most part, her career is playing cisgendered female, or, you know, roles where the gender is not a part of the character or a main part of the storyline.
Right. Which I wish that casting directors are starting to realize that is like scripts have that possibility.
You do anything.
Yeah.
Frances McDormand, a diversity writer. Two words.
Yes, I love her so much. Her acceptance speech.
You know, Frances Dormand, she said, if you're casting, make it a reflection of the community around you, not just a bunch of white guys.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing is, like, you know, you're better. Your production's going to be better.
Mm-hmm.
Like what we do here, you know, a lot behind the scenes, our web developer, our editors are different kinds of people and different gender identities and a very diverse crew that we have.
There was like some corporate study or something or some, I don't know, one of those things where they were like, did a group of like all cis white dudes and then a group, a like diverse group, or they studied like when you work with people who are like you versus when you have a diverse group. And they're like, when you work with people who are like you, you get it done faster, but the final product is less successful than when you have a diverse group where you might work slower, but the final product is better.
And it inspires creativity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember that study and I showed it to my manager. I said, this is why you want to hire people that are not just in terms of race or gender or age different, but in terms of mindsets, experiences, a lot of things. Diversity comes in lots of different shapes and sizes.
Yeah. Yeah. And you need different inputs for like different.
Not projects. Like a neoliberal, you know, it's like checking off a narrow list of parameters. But everybody agrees and see things in the same way.
Right.
And for me, it's like, if you really are committed to diversity, part of it is embracing people who have different ways of solving problems.
Right. And it's like being more patient.
Yeah. Not Pete Buttigieg, though. He sent out a mailer saying, it's like, oh, I all these African-American leaders love and respect me and endorse me. And they're all like, they're like, we didn't say that.
That's not us.
Really?
And 48% of the African-American leaders that endorse Pete Buttigieg are not African-Americans.
Oh, my God.
So he also unveiled something called the Douglas Plan. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I definitely will look at it.
Boy. After Frederick Douglass. Yeah.
And tomorrow we'll be talking to comedian Matt Brown about it, because he's not a big fan of Pete Buttigieg. But, you know, I guess a surface complaint that a lot of people are talking about is that they used for the photo of this, you know, his plan for the African-American community was stock photo from like Kenya, of these people in Kenya. And so people are just like, you know, some people are saying it's OK to use stock photo if it shows your sentiment. But other people are saying it's not really authentic representation of the African-American experience here in America. And if it was authentic, you would have used an authentic photo.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a graphic designer, honey, I'm always like, stock art, save me. You know, to me, it's like, I don't really care too much about who clip art is being used or not.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you're a politician and you're dealing with real lives, because, you know, we make fun of that kind of stuff when the far right does it. They do right. That kind of stuff all the time.
Right.
They, you know, have these people and like, this person supports it. And like, that's a stock photo. Or this is a stock photo. That's a stock photo. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's the same kind of criticism we ledge at, you know, right-wing people. So it's fair game as far as I'm concerned. And if you're doing outreach to a community that you feel is not supporting you, then support it back. Hire a black photographer to take a photo. He's one of these guys. He's got 19 billion. Is it 16 or 19 billionaires that are supporting his campaign? If he can't get a little money to get the right kind of artwork done to spread his message, then I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, he should. I mean, if you're going to make, if it's a big part of your campaign, you could put the time into it to figure that out.
Yeah. And part of it is like, you know, when you're a creative artist, a musician, and you invite people to be in your music video or your casting for it. I think especially if you're a commercially successful musician, you owe it to the people in, that you hire to pay them well.
Yeah, absolutely. If you get hired by somebody and you're like, oh, this person has billions of dollars and they're offering me nothing, it is disrespectful, I think.
Artists deserve to be paid and to be paid well. Mm-hmm. And Miss Fame, you guys heard her on the podcast, Clucking Like a Chicken.
From season 7 of RuPaul's Drag Race, right?
Yeah, and she's, you can listen to her on the archives at feastoffun.com/plus. And she, this week, through Justin Bieber, read him to filth because his team offered her $500 to be in his next music video. And she's like, I'm worth a lot more than this. She's go like, fuck yourself.
Well, she called it tokenism. It's like, you want to pander to the gay community, but you don't want to invest anything into the gay community.
That's so legit, I think. I mean, that's barely SAG rates, you know?
That's like, below SAG rates.
Yeah, that's insane. I mean, that's like... That's insane.
That's not even cover her wig.
Yeah, right? I know for a drag queen, you have to put so much more into
especially
it.
Especially like she's living in New York. She's like, I couldn't even fly to LA. Of course, she flies first class, you know,
for that. Yeah, but I mean,
you know, that $500 is what you offer the local drag queen that's working at the bar. You know what I mean? Who gets like $35 to show up at a gig.
That's what you offer an extra to be in the background for 5 days. They get $500.
Oh,
you
really?
Know? Yeah. Yeah, that's... insane.
And really, in the when you're doing a very lavish production and you're bringing in hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars, paying somebody $500 is really kind of a slap in the face.
A Justin Bieber music video? Yeah. That's like he's going to rent a set piece that costs more than that.
Now, I'm also torn about this. And let me know about this. Because part of it is like... yeah, I think, you know, this kind of injustice and this kind of disrespect needs to be talked about. But at the same time, would you want your name attached to it?
I would absolutely not make it public. I think that would be a thing I would talk about with my manager.
Why would you not do that publicly? Like in terms of you're an entertainer, you're a working artist, you're on television, you're famous to some people. Why do you think this is a bad idea of what Miss Fame did?
I think it's reflects poorly on yourself. I mean, everybody does it for their own career. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't. It depends.
How does it reflect poorly on Miss Fame?
I don't know for her. I mean, it might actually go very well with her career. It might because I don't know her. Maybe it goes well with her vibe that she's putting
Mariah
out there.
Now, I don't know her.
Yeah, I don't know her. I can't even do it right. I don't know her.
Part of it is like I you know, when someone lowballs me, I'm just like I just say no, thank you, and move on. Mm-hmm. And we've been lowballed.
Oh, yeah. There's people that wanted you to show up to stuff all the time to do stuff.
And I said to them, by me participating in this, you're asking me to fund your very successful, very lavish, very well-funded project at a loss for myself.
Mm-hmm. Now, the other thing, though, is there is a legitimate thing to think about there of maybe he's lowballing you then, but that exposure would get you that much more work. And I don't think what he's doing is right, but as a performer, you want to think about, I think, like, you know, what it's worth.
It's Justin Bieber. He's worth, like, what, $250 million? He can't throw you more than $500. You know what I mean? But the other hand, though, too, is like, you know, that's something that you've got on your resume. That's something you can share. That's something you'd be like to all the other. I'd be like, are there any other drag queens involved? No? Okay, I'll take it.
Right. You know, like, as long as there's no other drag. But the other thing is, she kind of maybe did a smart thing by talking about it because it's like, well, now I'm connected to Justin Bieber. Yeah. I didn't have to take his shitty gig.
Yeah.
And, everyone knows that Justin Bieber wants me now.
Yeah. But Justin Bieber doesn't value me more than $500. So maybe. Nobody else should.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, maybe they saw her act.
Maybe.
They saw her performing.
I don't know her.
We're lowering the price now.
Well, now it's $250.
Oh, God. What a horrible thought, like, feeling as a performer.
But, you know, for somebody like her, like, she's somebody who likes, she likes her high fashion. Like, it takes her hours to get ready. I mean, you're looking at, you know, if she were to go into that shoot, she would probably spend days getting ready for it.
I mean, there's, I imagine, I don't know how much drag queens get paid here, but I imagine you could do a Chicago gig for that much.
Oh, well.
Easy.
I mean, it depends on who you are and where you're at.
Well, let's answer the question really quickly. Shannon, would you be in a Justin music video for $500?
Look, Justin wouldn't put me in a music video because he knows that we're twins.
If you were offered.
If I were offered for $500, yes. No.
Honestly, no?
I would have to talk it over with people. I would have to figure it out. It would really depend.
Like, if you lived in LA, they're like, hey, we're doing this shoot tomorrow. It's $500.
Honestly, I'm poor as shit, so I'd probably say yes. Yeah. But at the same time, I think I would have a agent or manager negotiate for me. I'd be like, this is ridiculous.
Why aren't these drag queens hiring better managers and agents? It's like, we're just hearing litigation and story after story of a manager blocking, ruining, sabotaging their careers.
I can't imagine that somebody wouldn't be able to be like, this is absolutely insane. We need 10,000 or we walk. You know, like,
and people ask us all the time. I was like, why isn't so-and-so in the show? And I'm like, because they have a shitty manager. Mark, would you say yes or no to Justin Bieber offering you $500?
For what?
Anything.
To be in a video?
Yeah,
I would probably do it. I think it would be fun. You know, do I get to meet Justin Bieber? Do I get to see what it's like to be on the set? That kind of thing. Yeah, for sure. But also, it's like, am I going to have to fly out to L.A.? And like, you know, I got.
Are they covering the cost?
Do you get to stay in Justin Bieber's house?
You know, yeah.
I want, like, you know.
Is he going to get a tattoo of me on his butt cheek?
Justin, you can't pay me cash, $500, mm-hmm. but maybe you can give me what I'm worth in other ways.
Yeah. Could you tweet out like us, like making out? You know what I mean? We could be in a hot tub together.
I want to make out with Justin Bieber's dad.
Oh, yeah.
He's. You think Justin's cute? His dad's really cute.
I feel like I've seen.
Maybe both of them.
I think I'm getting
a little Bieber sandwich. You
know? A little Bieber Bialy. Yeah. A little Bieber.
Well, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like Justin Bieber is. He takes kind of his heart's in the right place to some degree, but he also takes a very status quo. Mm-hmm. You know, Pete Buttigieg kind of.
Well, the other thing, though, too, is
approach to life.
You know, I think there was a statement made by the production company or something like that. It was like, this is not Justin Bieber's decision. This is somebody involved in the production reaching out to them, asking her. And maybe that was the first person that came to their mind. Let's get fame, because they were like, oh, let's get a pretty drag queen. Mm-hmm. Let's get somebody that's high fashion, you know. But if they're shooting it out in L.A., there's literally 3,000 to 4,000 drag queens in L.A. that would show up for $500.
I mean, they're asking her specifically, so they want her, right?
Yeah.
I mean, then they should be willing to pay a lot more.
But this recently also came up too, because there was a lot of drag queens. I think it was Delta Work that pointed this out. They wanted drag queens to show up in drag for an event, promoting Maleficent, and you weren't going to get any payment. They weren't going to give you payment. They were going to pay for your costume, any of that kind of stuff. But you might be able to take a photo with Angelina Jolie.
Whoop-dee-doo.
Oh, my God.
So whether that's something you want to do or not, like, that's up to you. But also, too, one of the people, there was three drag queens that did it, and I believe they all showed up and had a picture taken with at the same time. And they maybe got their own pictures, too, with Angelina Jolie. But one of them went on to do a voice for a Disney short, right? Didn't Ian West do something? And I don't know if that was because she did that she got that other gig. So that's the thing, is like, you never know where these things are going to go.
And I wonder how much, if it's like actually different now, or if we just know about it more, if like, producers and stuff like that are taking advantage of young performers, because it is like, that's such a crappy way to do basically an open, like, get work for free from drag queens. But at the same time, like, did they used to do that with like shows and stuff?
In my day, we had no expectations of making it into any mainstream thing. Yeah. And so anybody who wants me, as long as I'm losing money, I'll do it.
And, you know,
if I can do it, I will do it.
Perspective. And a lot of drag queens, they just work for a tipped spot.
Right.
They have a new, somebody else was calling it something else now, a non-featured spot or a featured spot. I forget what it was, but it was basically you just show up and you work for tips, and that's what you're going to get. Mm-hmm. New York City for years, and I don't know if it's still the right, but the standard was, you know, you do two numbers, you got $50, you know? So it's like $50 compared to $500.
And, you know, sometimes it's like when they have a lot of drag queens involved in promotion stuff, And we know this because we get we're in that space. We get an email. And should I put them on blast?
You know the movie's going to suck if there's drag queens. Because Maleficent sucked.
Yeah.
And then Charlie's Angels just had
exactly.
Did it suck?
Charlie, yeah.
It bombed at the box office.
But Kristen Stewart's so hot.
Yeah. You know what?
She wasn't enough.
They invited us to come. I was going to come. But then it was just like I just got too busy and I wasn't able to make it and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's so for part of it is like once you know that they're using drag queens to promote it, it might not necessarily be the best thing.
I don't want to sound like Groucho Marx and be like, I don't want to be part of a club that would have me as its member.
Right.
But that's kind of what happens is like when the publicist all of a sudden is interested in you getting involved in the project, and you're like, wait a minute, you didn't give a fuck about me last week when you actually had something that was, you know, popular.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you're like, just kind of like, well, you know, it is a business and sometimes business is shitty, you know, and part of it is you can't rely on success, your success to be defined by your ability to associate with popular things and people.
Right, right.
It has to be something bigger than that.
Yeah, you have to be that. That's like a fun sprinkles on top. But you have to be doing your own work anyway.
Yeah. And no matter how big we get here or small, we will always talk to the same people, you know, which is creative, countercultural, pioneering, queer, ridiculous, funny, sassy, sophisticated, grassroots, underdogs that we love to celebrate because Feast of Fun is made possible. Because of your generous support.
For the past 15 years, our microphones, hard drives, mixers, and cables have fearlessly been recording podcasts with thousands of legendary LGBTQ artists. And right now, we need your help to save Feast of Fun. Two of our microphones are broken, our audio compressor is about to fail, our equipment and our website have had it officially, and are in urgent need of repairs in order to continue.
Plus, we'd like to bring back our special forums for listeners and guests of the show. A fun place to chat without fear of having their privacy compromised or exposing themselves to fights on Facebook.
Facebook fights.
If it's a fight, it's happening on Facebook. That should be their new advertising.
If it's that's the best Facebook commercial. Do you want to fight with your aunt you haven't spoken to in 10 years? Facebook.
This holiday season, please consider stuffing your stocking with Feast of Fun. Go to gofundme.com/savefeastoffun. Let me tell you that again. Go to gofundme.com/savefeastoffun and pledge any amount today. Thank you so much. And we want to do a shout out to Tom Goss.
Thank you, Tom.
And Kai Contreras.
And Frederico.
Gaspari. Thomas Daniels. Rick Garcia. The
Thank you, Rick.
Rick Garcia. And many, many other amazing people, including Anonymous. Sweet Gwendolyn. Alex Bartlett. Martin Sargent. Manny Capozzi. Manny wrote, thank you so much for supporting the LGBTQ community all these years.
Oh, thank you, Manny.
And Sweet Gwendolyn wrote, thanks for making the world a better place.
Aw, that's so sweet.
It's really, you know, it means so much to me and to have people, you know, help make this podcast possible, you know, and certainly people like Shannon Knoll who come on our show and hustle and bike here and
I drove today.
Oh,
right. I didn't hustle up here today, but I drove like a queen.
You got to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
And that's like in 2020, like if we're able to do a new season of Cooking with Drag Queens, I'd like to invite you to be part of the series because I think you're an amazing artist and you have so much to offer. And I'd like to see you with a little something, something extra.
Ooh, thank flair. You. A little bit of fancy, fancy.
I think you could make, you know, Ellen DeGeneres out of the red carpet look like a hobo.
My goal.
We don't say hobo anymore.
Hobo American.
I would love to someday walk down the red carpet and just hand someone a bag of trash and just keep on walking. Just like.
I would, if I were walked the red carpet, it would be fun to have like a bag of jeweled trash.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
Like an accessory garbage bag.
I don't get is that what Ellen did? She had a bag of trash and just handed it to someone?
No,
what,
but what? Like that would, I just am thinking, I'm thinking of like catty things to do on the red carpet.
Oh.
So yeah, I want to tell,
What? I was gonna, Shannon, have you ever been attacked by a wild animal?
No, I've always wanted to be, but I never have been.
Like, what kind of animal would you want to be attacked by?
I want to survive a bear attack.
Ooh. Do you know how to survive
a bear attack?
I don't
think that's a good idea.
I don't. Every time I've seen a bear in real life, I've been terrified. So I don't think I'd do well.
You would die. The thing is, yeah, that you want to do is you want to play dead, they say.
With grizzly bears, with black bears, you want to run.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I think it's like two different things. Grizzly bears, you got to. No, with grizzly bears. Oh, boy. I think
I
with
know
grizzly
you can
bears,
run downhill
you want to run.
Because they can't run downhill.
They can't run downhill.
No,
do they tumble?
They tumble or something like that, so they won't do that.
Those dumb
but most
bears.
Of the time,
all that honey.
Yeah. Most of the time, they're not going to attack you, but if you surprise them or something like that, you know, or by your cubs, like that kind of thing. But yeah, I always thought you're supposed to like lay down and just pretend like you're dead. Cover your head, cover your neck, because they'll probably like swat you a little bit to see mm-hmm. what's going on, and then they'll probably just leave.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they don't want fresh meat. They want it to be a little old or something, I think.
Yeah, meat's ew. Not sweet. It's savory.
Oh, yeah, they want sweet meats.
But this dude in Australia, he's a game warden. He was just attacked by a crocodile. So he's there, and this crocodile like grabbed a hold of him and tried to drag him underwater. And that's the thing you don't want to happen. Because once like an alligator or a crocodile gets you underwater, they do the death roll. And they spin themselves. And so because they're spinning themselves, they're spinning you. And that's going to disorient you. And also, you're going to get water in your lungs. Because what the crocodiles like to do is they drown you. And then they stick you under like a log or something like that. And then they let you ferment for a little while because, again, they like you stinky.
They cook you.
Yeah, basically. And so then they eat you slowly over time. And so what he did, because, you know, he's getting bit by and dragged by this crocodile. He doesn't know what to do. You know, their skin is like leather. You can't get through anything. He's just like, so he just stuck his fingers into its eyes. And I guess their eyes go back pretty far. So he had to really stick his fingers into the eye. And eventually the crocodile kind of like let go. And then he was able to get on top of the crocodile and then hold the crocodile's snout closed. And eventually he's just lying like he and the crocodile are both like, he's like described it as a moment where he's just like, he and the crocodile are both like, okay, what's gonna happen now? And so then he just kind of like let the crocodile go, and then he just like jumped off him, and the crocodile slipped back into the water.
A blind crocodile now.
Well, I don't know if he was blind. But,
was this
know.
This happened all on land, or did the crocodile get him into the water?
And I don't think he got him into the water.
Wow.
He came up. He was probably like at water's edge or something like that.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Oh my god, that is, I didn't know that crocodiles did that gross food preparation.
There's, oh yeah, and there's also crocodiles in Indonesia that have learned to bark like a dog, because that's one of their main food sources now, is that they make a noise, and the dogs come over to investigate, and then they jump up out of the water, grab them, and then they're gone.
That's good. Did you know, and some of them, they go in trees. In Louisiana, the crocodiles go up in trees and they'll jump out on top of people.
Oh my god.
Look it up. There's pictures.
What?
Yeah.
That's
this like
madness.
Person was she was telling me she's like her friends wanted her to go like on a swamp thing and she was like, there's crocodiles and trees down there. They're like, no. And then she showed them there's crocodiles
well, first
and
of
trees.
All, there are no crocodiles and trees because they're alligators.
Okay.
In North America.
Yes, that
okay.
is all right. Yeah. Crocodiles are the long nose yeah. ones.
Well, at one
yeah,
point,
just
in time,
Google pictures of alligators in trees.
Oh, really?
It's horrifying.
It's horrifying.
Yeah.
Well, oh when you think God. About it, though, too, is like, what is it, you know, when you think about someday we'll probably have some kind of apocalypse and what kind of monsters come after the apocalypse is like, you know, technically we are those monsters after the apocalypse
right.
now, because there's been like five major like destructions of this planet. And at one point in time, crocodiles ruled the earth. And there was like hundreds of different varieties. Some of them were like had really tall, long legs and walked around like dogs.
As seen in the documentary Dinotopia.
Yeah.
Have you seen that?
You know,
crazy. Who was smoking what?
So now you know they're very
go
few
look
of
at
them,
it on
but
YouTube.
Those they've been around for hundreds and hundreds of millions of years, so they've got some longevity.
Do you think I heard that squids are going to take over?
Oh, you think?
Because they're super smart. Squids are very smart.
Are squids smarter than octopus?
I think so. One of them is smarter than the other. One is smart and one is dumb.
No,
they're smart.
Octopus are smart.
They're smart because they climb out and they go in and get other stuff. Yeah.
But they're not very curious.
No?
They're not.
Fasta's been on many dates with octopus.
They're just, you know, they're smart at getting what they want.
Yeah.
Curiosity is identifying things you don't you didn't know you needed, but now you're really glad you discovered them.
Then my cat is very smart.
Yeah. I would say, like, in the future, I mean, we're talking, you know, 100,000 years from today, I think our interesting relationship and partnership with cats and dogs is going to continue in very really beautiful ways. If we don't annihilate the planet and we don't destroy all life on this earth, and we manage to somehow have a Green New Deal and save ourselves from our own self-destruction, then in the future, we're going to have some very interesting sharing the planet with dogs and cats.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. Do you ever read Octavia Butler?
No.
She's a great, was a great science fiction author. And I think she's still alive. But she writes about, like, there's this one series about, like, this species that's, like, way more advanced than humans. And humans have annihilated themselves except for a handful. Mm. And this species is trying to intermingle our DNA to... They basically, like, they call it sharing or trading with other species, where they intermingle DNA. And
yeah, I can see, like, that happen.
I don't know. Yeah, we're going to do that with dogs and cats.
I mean, here's the thing. Human beings wouldn't be as social of animals as we are today if it wasn't our influence from living with dogs for so long. Mm. And same goes for dogs. Like, we evolved our social nature together through a collaboration.
I don't know if that's really true. Wolves have a pack, you know, and humans have often had their own pack.
But we've influenced dogs' existence, dogs have influenced our existence.
Do you think that we're all just pack animals and we're like, oh, well, I recognize that. Let's just be pack animals together.
Mm-hmm. Part of it is that, like, our survival to this point in our history stems from a lot from our successful partnership with different types of species, but especially dogs. Mm-hmm. And when you have a really deep relationship, a connection with your dog, it's something that transcends time, and it's ability to recognize that we're much more than just our own, you know, bodies and ourselves and our consciousness, but that we're tied to something even bigger, which is life on Earth.
Yeah.
Oh, it's beautiful.
That's so sweet.
That's what I want for Christmas. Well, let's talk about, before we wrap things up, I want to talk about Chick-fil-A is going gay. Sort of.
Well, they said that they're going to stop contributing to these anti-gay organizations. But I feel like they've said this before and they kind of went back on it. Now, maybe as an organization as a whole might not be doing it, but I'm sure, like, you know, the founders and a lot of their people who own these franchises, because you pretty much have to be a Christian to own a franchise. Mm-hmm. They're probably still going to make their own individual donations.
They're just hiding their homophobia. Yeah.
And, you know, this, I think they're finally coming to it because, you know, there was a place, they had a shop in the UK, and after 8 days they were like, no, you're done here, you're not going to do this because of your homophobia. So they're really seeing, like, they're like, it's kind of surprised, I think, going outside of the United States. They're like, wow, not everyone's a backward fuck like we are here in the United States. People actually have, you know, morals and compassion and understanding of the human condition.
Yeah.
Didn't they send a priest to Uganda to help write an LGBT death penalty?
One of the organizations that they did. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
They funded that. So it's like, what are you going to do to take care of that kind of stuff? You know, why not just love your neighbor, bitches, huh?
Hey.
Love your neighbor. Eat your chicken.
Yeah. I have some friends who are like, they're diehard Chick-fil-A lovers. And they're like, at lunch, some of my coworkers turn to me and they're like, Fausto, I'm going to go eat at Chick-fil-A. Don't hate me. And I'm like, man, I hope you choke on that sandwich.
Yeah, right. I know. There's like so many people. I see a trend in stand up right now of people doing jokes about being guilty, feeling guilty about eating at Chick-fil-A. Mm. I'm like, I got no compassion for you. I'm vegan and I can't eat anywhere. So,
yeah, when trans fat is the only trans you care about, you got to reexamine your.
You can, like, I only like one kind of trans.
Yeah, the one I could stick in my stomach.
Which is all of them, to be honest.
Not all the way.
Stomach, yeah.
Stick inside you. But the best fried chicken sandwich is the one you just make at home. You can buy brioche buns at the grocery store. And if you don't want to make fried chicken, go to any truck stop. The fried chicken at any truck stop is going to be better than anything Popeyes, McDonald's.
But I think that what they do is I think the secret is that they brine their chicken in pickle juice or something.
They brine it in transphobia.
Yeah, they brine it in their own hatred. What you're tasting is hate.
Have you guys actually had the Popeyes elusive fried chicken?
No, let's get it right now.
Well, it's Shannon, that, you don't right? eat.
I don't eat it. My roommate had it, and he loved it. Oh, he said it was very good.
Okay.
I spoke to Sweet Gwendolyn about this, and they told me that the chicken sandwich didn't have enough sauce because the people at the Popeyes are, like, hating their jobs right now. Because all these pushy people are coming, and they're like, where's the fried chicken sandwich? And they're, like, squirting the sauce unevenly and making them kind of, like, haphazardly. And
of course, that's how fast food is.
I heard that you should ask for it with extra pickles. It's supposed to be good. Now, one of our friends and a drag queen who's been on this podcast a couple of times and on Cooking with Drag Queens, Erica Clash, season two of Dragula, she was at Whataburger, I think it was, in Austin, Texas. And they told her she couldn't come in because of like the way she was dressed. And they're like, well, it's our policy. You know, it's like, you can't wear a mask or something like that because it makes people feel unsafe. And she's like, it's makeup, first of all.
Oh, my God.
But, you know.
Well, when it comes to Erica, it
could look like a mask.
Extreme looking. But this is not the first time she's eaten dress up looking like that at a Whataburger. Mm-hmm. And so this was a specific Whataburger near the UT college campus, actually.
That's so clearly one of those like rules that suddenly appears whenever people feel threatened by a gay person or a trans person.
Yeah.
Those rules come up so magically. It's amazing.
And part of me is like, girl, where was your phone video camera when this happened? You should have filmed it.
Right?
You'd be a star.
Yeah. Whip out your phone in any of those situations.
Yeah.
Feel safe.
If you feel safe or have your friends film you, you know, and if you're friends with somebody and they're experiencing that, document it. Put it out there.
Yeah. It's amazing how much better people behave as soon as they see you filming them. Also, people will. I used to work being a tour guide and
what tours did you do?
The double decker bus tours.
Oh my God. It Are we on the top fun. Or the bottom?
Top. I was on the top. I was a top. and like one of the drivers there, this guy, I loved him, but he was fully antagonistic towards drivers, and he would always get in fights with cab drivers, and the company was finally like, this looks bad when you get into a screaming match and the cab driver gets out of the car and approaches the bus. They're like, you got to stop fighting with them. So what he started doing was just filming them on his phone, and it would make them so mad that they would just get themselves in trouble, and it looked like he did nothing. And I was like, that's very smart.
That is smart. I've been filming this whole podcast.
Yeah, right? Let me go back.
Sometimes I do wish we had a, you know, camera.
You could set it up, live stream.
You know, because sometimes I feel like there have been times that I wish we had a camera that's part of the reason why I try to do some of the guests. I like having the guests in person because we get to react to each other's nonverbal body language. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it adds something magical.
And you get to have fun toys or workout devices like this hand thingy.
And so, you know, there's a magical aspect of being here in the room. And I enjoy every single moment I have with the lovely Shannon Knoll.
Thank you so much. I love coming here. This is always a blast.
Now, people can check you out and follow you on social media, on Instagram, Facebook, where you can fight with you.
You can come fight with me. I love being fought with. Please don't. But also, you can follow me, Shannon L. Knoll. That's S-H-A-N-N-O-N, the letter L-N-O-L-L.
And the L stands for lover.
Lover.
And check out your web series at Call Me Ripley.
Just Call Me Ripley.com.
Just Call Me Ripley.
Yeah, check it out.
Hey, I want to do a shout out to Sesame Street celebrating 50 years of inspiring and educating people and teaching them about language, letters, numbers, and what it's like to have HIV, to be autistic, to be a misfit of some kind, and celebrating same-sex couples, Bert and Ernie, or the concept of near and far.
and inspiring young lesbians with Maria.
That's right. Aww. Maria, yes. Maria, take a letter, honey. We're going to be leaving you here with the closing themes of Sesame Street. So remember, folks, Feast of Fun is made possible because of the letters F-O-F and the number 680 that we've raised so far. Can we get up to 1,000? Go to GoFundMe.com/SaveFeastOfFun. We want to thank you, everybody, for listening to today's show. And thanks again, Shannon.
Thank you for having me. Shannon. Thank you.
Welcome.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Feast of Fun is made possible because of generous support of fantastic people just like you. Go to feastoffun.com/plus and become a member today, or support our GoFundMe at gofundme.com/savefeastoffun. We're leaving you here with Sesame Street's ending theme, Can You Tell Me How to Get to Sesame Street, composed by Joe Raposo, John Stone, and Bruce Hart, with Gene Toots Thielemans on the harmonica. Funky, funky, funky. Take it away.